Welcome to the College Admissions Process Podcast presented by Prep Expert. Prep Expert offers live online SAT and ACT courses with the best score guarantees, instructors, and curriculum. Go to prepexpert.com to guarantee your child's success. Welcome to the CAP, the College Admissions Process Podcast. I am your host, John Durante, and it gives me great pleasure to introduce to you today Chris Liu, who's the Director of College Counseling at the Stony Brook School in beautiful Stony Brook, New York. She's also on the Board of Directors for the National Association for College Admission Counseling, which is also known as NACAC. Chris, thank you so much for being here today. How are you?
I'm doing great, John. Thank you so much for having me on today. I am really excited to be talking to you today.
Well, it's our honor and pleasure. It was so great to connect with you through our NACAC contacts. And I can honestly say that the NACAC National Conference down in Baltimore was one of the best professional development conferences I have ever attended, Chris. And I've been to quite a few over the years. Can you share how NACAC, which of course, again, is the National Association for College Admission Counseling, not only supports students and their parents, but also school counselors in navigating the college admissions process? Now, Chris, I mentioned the school counselors because although the majority of the people that listen to this podcast are students preparing for college along with their parents, because of my email opt-in list, I know that there's a lot of counselors that also listen. So I just wanted to include them in terms of how NACAC supports, again, students, parents, and school counselors in navigating the college admissions process.
Yeah, I have to agree with you, John. I think the NACAC conference is one of the best professional development conferences out there, and I'm thrilled that you had the chance to attend. I do want to say that NACAC, I'd like to kind of refer to it as a one-stop shop, not just for students and parents, but definitely for school counselors. But let me address the students and parents first. A couple of resources on the NACAC website that I think is super helpful for students and parents. One is there's a great resource to guide them through the application process itself. It starts right at the beginning with preparing students, and it ends with how to pay for college, which I have already paid 3 children's tuition. And so that has become super important to me, and I'm sure to many parents. But that is called Your Journey on the website, and it goes from prep to search to actually applying, making that college decision. It will walk them through fee waivers and then actually paying for college with lots of financial aid resources. The other thing is that NACAC's perennial resource, which is called the Guide to College Admissions Process, it was just updated this year, and that is also a great resource available on our website. I also want to say there are lots of links to NACAC's podcast network, John. And of course, I want to give out a shout out to your podcast, which is actually linked on there.
Thank you.
You know, as well as podcasts like the College Essay Guy with Ethan Sawyer, the Admissions Beat, but there's a ton more. And there is also information on the website on college fairs, which students and parents are really able to go to. So that's on the student and parent side. For counselors, wow, there is so much actually for school counselors. One is if you're a new counselor, there is a new counselor series of webinars called Counselor Bites. What's great about them is that they're just a half hour providing school counselors with insights to just help their students navigate the process. There's also just a whole wide array of topics with lots of experts that will help new counselors become better at what they're doing. There are also tons of certificates for counselors on the professional development side. There's a character focus initiative, which is a 3-course bundle that focuses on how to assess character in the admissions process. And then on the post-secondary side, there is a school counseling program certificate. And then there's an International University Advocate certificate, a bunch more certificates that school counselors can take advantage of. In addition, we have an Anti-Racism Institute training. You know, there's NCA information, trends in college admissions. Yeah, there's actually so much more I could talk about, John, but in the interest of time, I would just say it's a fantastic place for school counselors to go. There is so much on there to help you better do your job.
Well, I couldn't agree more. Like I said, it was definitely the best conference that I went to ever down in Baltimore. And because of that, I'm going to also be at the conference upcoming this fall out in Los Angeles. Now, you mentioned all of the resources for the students and their parents, along with school counselors. I always have links in our show notes. So, Chris, any links that you want to share for, again, the students, the parents, the counselors, just provide them to me. And, of course, we'll put them in the show notes. Now, as a member of the NACAC Board of Directors, what are some key initiatives or programs that you've been involved with that have significantly impacted the college admissions landscape?
So I want to talk about one that is actually in the process of coming into existence. This is super exciting. NACAC is in the process of building a Center for Reimagining College Access. Our vision statement is that the transformative power of post-secondary education is accessible to all. And, you know, honestly, John, some people will read that and think, yeah, that's like a nice phrase, you know, to say, but NACAC actually really believes this. And so we are gathering resources and experts to really man the Center for Reimagining College Access to do exactly this, to reimagine what college access could look like for students. We really want to take a hard look at, you know, equity in the process and to gather people to say, hey, how could this look different? You know, what could the future look like for college admissions? In 2023, NACAC actually acquired the work of a volunteer organization called the Character Collaborative. It's run by NACAC at this point, and it's called the Character Focus Initiative. And so the vision of this group is fantastic. It was really to promote the use of character attributes in the evaluation of candidates for admission to colleges and independent schools. And so one of the things that NACAC has is there's a survey actually on our website about the most important factors that colleges are looking at in the admissions process. And actually this past year, pretty high up on that list was actually character. It has definitely become more important to colleges. You know, as we know, the admissions process is primarily an academic process. Colleges are asking the question, can this student do the work? But more and more, I think colleges are really looking at attributes like kindness, grit, you know, loyalty and integrity. And so as we work through the Character Focus Initiative, you know, we are really taking a look at how can colleges continue, right, this initiative in evaluating character in the admissions process. I also want to say that NACAC, as an organization, has really met the moment. As you probably know, John, it was a very interesting year in higher education.
You mean the FAFSA?
Yes. As you know, there were FAFSA delays alongside the Department of Justice, the decision on race-conscious admissions. And so one of the things we have are lots of links and resources to navigate both of those decisions after that happened. And so in regard to the FAFSA delays, one of the things that NACAC did immediately was they put together a list of colleges that had altered their deposit deadline dates. So that was just one place where people could go and immediately see, you know, did my college change their enrollment deadline date? We approved budget this year to hire more NACAC staff, which has been great. It has allowed NACAC to do more things like college fairs, DEI initiatives, advocacy. And probably the most important thing is that it has really given NACAC staff more bandwidth, more life and work balance. I think it's just been fantastic to be able to give that to them. We've also diversified the composition of the NACAC Board of Directors. I believe that we now have the most diverse board of directors that they've ever had. And so that is really fantastic to be able to have different voices at the table as we're talking about higher education. NACAC also rebranded its platform. We not only have a new logo, but we put together something called Engage. And that's an opportunity actually for admissions counselors and school counselors and people who work at CBOs to just simply get on and connect with other members. So at this point, about 5,000 people are using the platform. It's an opportunity for them to sort of network with colleagues, gain insights, find out if there are job postings. And so that's been a really fantastic way for people to really engage with each other. I do want to say on the advocacy front, NACAC recently sent a letter to the Department of Education Secretary to petition for a reminder to the Department of Education grant recipients for allowable uses of funds that support secondary students, school counselors, and college access advisors. So that was really, really important for us. I also want to say we are launching HBCU Advance. That's really our first event to simply focus on the work that HBCUs are doing in historically Black colleges and universities. So honestly, John, I could probably be here for another hour telling you about what has been really exciting about being on NACAC's board and the initiatives that we are taking. But I would just say this in summary, we're doing a lot of things in providing resources, events to really, move forward in fulfilling this vision of making post-secondary education accessible to all students.
Well, NACAC definitely has that worthy cause of reimagining the college process. And as you said, making it accessible to all. You mentioned so many different resources, and I appreciate that you talked about the HBCU Advance. Ironically, I just interviewed Tim Fields and Shireem Herndon Brown regarding their book, The Black Family's Guide to College Admissions. It was a great episode, which already got a ton of downloads. So it's interesting that you just mentioned that because we just recorded and released that episode. Chris, in addition to being on the NACAC Board of Directors, we know that you are, as I mentioned earlier, the Director of College Counseling again at the Stony Brook School here on Long Island in New York. For students who may not have access to robust college counseling resources at their schools, what advice would you give them to effectively navigate the college admissions process through their high school years?
Yeah, I definitely realize, John, that my students have lots of resources and we have a pretty small student body. But I actually worked at a school that had almost four times the number of students as the number of students I currently work with. And so I definitely have had that experience of having probably not enough counselors and a lot of students. So I would say the first thing is, I think it's probably a hard reality. But when there are, a lot of students and not as many counselors to be able to work with them, you often find yourself kind of responding to, students who are in your office, students who are proactive, kind of the squeaky wheel, getting the attention, kind of thinking. So the first piece of advice I would give to students is be proactive, right? If you have a high school counselor, get into their office, sign up for meetings, take advantage of the things that are offered at your high school, go to events that are being offered at your high school. So simply showing up, I think, would be the first piece of advice that I would have for students. Secondly, colleges will actually often do presentations in regional areas. They will, maybe show up at another high school in your area. So if you can find out if another high school is hosting an event, I think that that is a good way to kind of find out more about colleges. I will also say that there are a ton of free resources, podcasts, webinars, college fairs, YouTube videos. I think that NACAC also certainly has a lot of these free resources. So I would say, definitely get on the internet, see what is out there. Even things like SAT prep, you can find that free resources to be able to do things like that. But there's just a lot of things out there on the online for students to be able to take advantage of. There are also lots of colleges offer free fly-ins and other opportunities to visit colleges. Many of these fly-ins are for students of color, first gen, low income, but some of them are actually for all students. And so, that's another thing that you can take a look at and find out about is a college that I'm really interested in offering a fly-in or other opportunities for me to connect. I would also say that for underclassmen, outgoing seniors are great resources for students to be able to connect and get tips on the application process. At our own school, we often do exit interviews with our seniors, and we do ask them the question of if you could redo this process, What would you do differently? What advice do you have for our rising seniors? There are also things like mentoring programs and opportunities. New York State ACAC actually hosts a program called Camp College. That is, you know, it's an overnight weekend college access and information program. And that is geared toward rising juniors and seniors, but opportunities like that exist in other states as well. And then, yeah, I think there are essay writing resources. Ethan Sawyer, the college essay guy, a lot of people are familiar with his resources. We use them. He offers a ton of stuff, not just on essay writing, but on mm-hmm. all parts of that application process. And so, yeah, I would say be proactive, do some research. But there are definitely resources out there for students if they're at a school where they may not have as much face-to-face time with their school counselor.
Well, I appreciate that. You talked about being proactive. So students, if you have a school counselor, definitely get to know them and sign up for whatever it is that they offer. You also talked about all of the different free resources. So certainly do your research. There are free resources related to standardized tests, students to assist you in the college search. There are virtual opportunities available to most schools, colleges, and universities throughout the country. So it's really just being proactive and looking what's available to you, not to mention all of the different podcasts, not only this one, but as Chris said, NACAC has a podcast network, which we will link in the show notes. So how has the role, Chris, of college counseling evolved over the years, particularly in light of challenges brought about by, for example, the COVID-19 pandemic, which include mental health concerns, and how are colleges approaching standardized tests, just to name a few things?
Yeah, those are definitely some things we've navigated over the last couple of years, John. I want to address maybe the testing first. It has changed because, as you know, once the pandemic hit, a lot more colleges decided to go test optional. And so in the past, it was a little bit easier for us to, you know, students didn't have the option of whether they were going to submit that test score. So it was a little bit easier for us to advise students about whether, you know, they should take that test another time. And now it's kind of like, it's given us more options, I think, as counselors. If we know that standardized testing is a weakness for a student, mm-hmm. now in the interest of, you know, sort of life, giving them a little bit of life back. I may actually just say to a student, hey, let's not spend many more time on this. You know, mm-hmm. let's work on your personal statement or go out and, you know, have some fun with your friends and get a little bit of that time back. However, because colleges are now test optional, it's also placed us in the position of trying to figure out when a student should submit that test score. And sometimes it's not a one and done kind of thing. Now I have to figure out if a student should submit that test score to this school, but not that school. So that process has become much more nuanced. I also want to say that I didn't think it was possible, John, but we continue to hear from colleges that they've had a record number of applications.
Hmm.
I'm not so sure true. When that is going to actually not be the case, but that has also resulted in lower acceptance rates, especially at highly selective colleges. So we now have to really be careful about helping students put together college lists that provides real options for them. Safety schools are not what they used to be. And so, you know, we really need to make sure that a student has a balanced list of colleges. And so colleges that when I started in this position 9 years ago that had actually closer to a 30% acceptance rate, some of them are now in single digits. And so, you know, we've had to be really more strategic with students about putting that list together. I have to say that there definitely has been an increase in mental health issues. And sometimes a student feels compelled to share that story. They feel like that they must tell us a college, right, that they've had mental health issues. And so navigating through that, because sometimes we want students to understand that we want them to show up as their full selves in the process, that sometimes there is a bit of a we want students to get beyond the single story, right? That they only have one narrative. And sometimes for certain students, it's the right thing to do to disclose the mental health concerns in their application. And sometimes we will advise a student, hey, it may not be necessary, and there are other parts of you that maybe you want to communicate to colleges. And then finally, I do just want to mention this one other thing, John. We really are committed to making sure that students have integrity about the process. I think that as students feel more pressure to get into certain colleges, sometimes there is that temptation to inflate information, exaggerate information. And it honestly makes me a little bit sad, if I was fully transparent, because I think the message they send to themselves is, I am not enough, right, in who I am. And so, at our school, Stony Brook's motto is character before career. We are always driving this thought that we want you to move through this process with integrity, that your true and authentic self is actually the most strategic thing that you can do in this process. And we want you to feel like, colleges want to hear your true story. And so I would say that those are some of the major changes that we've seen over the years.
We appreciate that. And I like a lot of what you said. One thing was safety schools are not what they used to be. So you emphasize the importance of that balanced list. I mentioned the conversation I had recently with Tim Fields and Shireen Herndon Brown, and we talked about how there are many schools out there. I said, schools that accept less than 10%. I think it was Tim that said even schools that are accepting less than 25%. The point is that all of those schools that accept that small of a number, that is a reach school for everyone. I know of a student recently who got into Yale but wanted Princeton, and guess what? Didn't get into Princeton, right? No rhyme or reason, but the point is that those are two schools that accept less than 10%. So no matter how great you are, that's a reach school for everyone. So to your point, with more applications and schools not necessarily changing their institutional priorities in terms of the number of students they're trying to create in that freshman class, it's become ever more important to have that balanced list. Anything else that you want to add to that, Chris?
Yeah, I do want to say, I think that's absolutely right, John. I think one of the other dangers that students, I would say that they kind of can fall into, is what I call sort of the Disney princess, thought on college applications. Is that, I have nothing against Disney, but it is, when you watch some of those princess movies, it's like there's a prince out there, right? And right. I've got to get to him somehow. And so I often tell students, there are many schools that I believe would be a good fit for you. But to put your hopes in a single school, I think can really be a dangerous thing to that student.
Well, I appreciate that, especially since there are over 4,000 colleges and universities throughout the entire country. There's definitely a lot of schools for each and every student. But to your point, not every school is necessarily for you. So we talk about it all the time. It's very important not to look at where your friend is going, but to really reflect, get to know who you are. Do you want to be far from home, close from home? Is a car ride enough? Are you okay with being on an airplane? Do you want big, small, suburban, urban? And I could go on and on and on. And the beauty is that there is no one size fits all. And to support that, again, there's over 4,000 colleges and universities throughout the country. And I think the reason why, Chris, it's so stressful for so many people, it's because so many students are focused on those 50 schools, right? And we could probably name some of them easily. But if you expand your horizons, right, and you really look at a wider list and come up with that balanced list to your point, I think it would help with the mental health issues and the stress that so many people face when applying to college. Anything else you want to add on that, Chris?
John, I tell this story at nauseam, but since your audience doesn't know me, it'll be like the first time. My three children had very different processes, even though they were all really high-performing students. Mm-hmm. And so my oldest daughter actually got into an Ivy League school and a SUNY school. Those were mm-hmm. the two choices at the end of her process. And, you know, you probably guess how this story ends. We sent her to the SUNY school because she really needed to be that big fish in a small pond. And at the end of those 4 years, she was a different kid, had gained confidence. You know, professors knew who she was. And the icing on the cake for us was that she was actually their commencement speaker. Wow. And she's actually now at that Ivy League school doing her PhD.
Oh, wow. That's now, awesome.
John, if you have more than one child in your family, you know, like you feed them all the same food and somehow they just turn out to be completely different creatures. My second child also got into one of the Ivies and it was the perfect place for her, you know, and she loved it and had a great experience. And then my youngest, actually, very sort of classic youngest child, just wanted, you know, early decision, got into a school, and which was a good fit as well. And so I always feel like I want to get to know students. I want parents to tell me about their child. And as you said, let's look at the factors that are going to make this a great experience for you.
Well, I appreciate that. And my listeners know, maybe you don't know, Chris, I have two daughters and they were very different academically. And the process for both of them was definitely a challenge because I was kind of going through it with my second daughter with COVID. And we were very lucky that she actually came on the visits when we did so prior to COVID with her older sister. But the point is that that's when I felt the stress as a parent, right? Because my child, you know, high school did not come easy to her. And I have to say that the admissions reps were so accessible, which is what prompted me to come up with this idea of having a podcast where most of the episodes are me talking to an admissions rep. Because look, I'm a principal in a high school in a very academic area. We have counselors that are phenomenal. We have parents that are well-educated and the students are highly academic and they just want more and more of what we offer. But that's not the case everywhere. So, you know, having this podcast, having the resources that you mentioned through NACAC, just to give accessibility to all is something that, you know, is so important. And so I appreciate all these resources, all of these different ideas that you're sharing. Another thing that came up recently, Chris, as you know, is the Supreme Court decision not to include race in college admissions criteria, which has sparked many discussions. How do you anticipate this decision will impact the college admissions landscape? And what advice do you have for students navigating this changing environment?
I would say, John, it's hard to predict that. You know, I guess we'll have to wait and see when all of the students deposit and colleges come back to us and let us know how it has impacted their student body and the diversity there. But if we take a look at California and Michigan, where they took race out of the admissions process decades ago. You know, the UC system is, I think that they're just getting back to diversity levels, you know, decades later from when they instituted taking race out of this process. And we saw the same in Michigan. There was a drastic reduction, particularly in the number of Black students. And so what I would anticipate is that it is going to result in less diversity in student bodies, particularly at highly selective colleges, but that remains to be seen. What I will say on the student side is that what the court did not take away is the ability of students to discuss how race has affected their life through discrimination, inspiration, or otherwise. That is actually the ruling from the court. And so, you know, what I tell students now is if your racial identity is an important and integral part of who you are, then let's find a way for you to really talk about that in the application without checking off that box now. And so whether that's through extracurricular activities, whether that is through the personal statement, I am advising students that if this is part of an important you know, part of something you want to present to colleges, then let's work on this. I really do hope that it does not have a huge impact on the diversity of student bodies on these campuses, because I really think that it is so necessary for students to be in diverse environments, John. It challenges stereotypes. It better prepares students for the workforce. You know, it allows them to have conversations with people who don't look like them, who haven't grown up like them. And, you know, honestly, we need that now more than ever, right? For young people to be able to be in environments where they're being challenged, right? And they're expanding their worldview. And so I think that diversity really benefits the college experience for everyone, not just students of color. And so if a student wants that to be an important part of their process, what I am telling students is that the Supreme Court did not take your ability away to do just that.
Understood. And I wonder if schools have mission statements that speak about wanting to foster a diverse learning community. And to your point, they talk about how race has affected their life. I wonder if that, by default, will create a nice, robust, and diverse student body. Any thoughts on that, Chris?
Yeah, I do think that there are colleges definitely have come out with statements that they're really committed to diversity in their student body. I think the other thing that many colleges did was that they tweaked their supplemental essay question so that it addresses not, I wouldn't say overtly diversity, but it does ask students to kind of talk about their backgrounds and what they would bring to a campus. So we definitely are seeing colleges and their commitment to bringing in a diverse student body.
Yeah, and we'll see, you know, as the years progress, how these changes affect, you know, the different makeups of the colleges. Chris, in your experience, what are some common misconceptions students and parents have about the college admissions process, and how can they be addressed?
I'll just address a couple of things, John. One is students and parents have heard this. Test optional doesn't actually mean that it's optional. I'm not going to be given a fair read. A student who submits a test score is going to have a better chance of getting in than I will. Where I point them to is the common data set. And each college actually produces this information. And they can actually, you know, see the number of students, right, who were accepted and the percentage that submitted and didn't submit a test score. And most of the time, the data actually tells us, no, like, you know, lots of kids are getting in who did not submit a test score. The second misconception is colleges just care about grades and test scores. And I don't think that that is true either. You know, we hear from colleges that they engage in holistic admissions, right? They read holistically. They're really looking for other things as well as tests and the transcript. They're looking to see what that student is going to bring to the student body. The other thing I hear quite often is that if I declare that I am undeclared with regard to my major, that is going to disadvantage me. And so I must, you know, declare a major. I often tell students who really are undeclared and they don't really have a, you know, that thing that they really want to study, that what we're rarely hearing from colleges is it's not going to disadvantage you in the process. And then finally, sometimes students are thinking, I should be a classics or philosophy major because there are way too many STEM majors, too many kids declaring biology and psychology, that's going to be my best chance of getting in. And, you know, again, I really try to talk to students about their identity and their integrity, which for me are two really important drivers in this process.
Well, I appreciate those comments that you made. And I think, again, if you have that balanced list that you spoke about earlier and you're true to yourself, right, with that integrity, you're going to find the right fit for you. And why would you, for example, want to say that you're going to major in philosophy if you really don't want to, but you're just doing it just to try to get into a school? It really doesn't make sense. I think you have to be true to yourself, students. Do your research. Find that right fit. Again, over 4,000 colleges and universities in the United States alone, there's a school for everyone. And I also appreciate that you talked about the myth that the test optional nature is really not true. I can tell you that one of the questions that I ask the representatives is, okay, you say you test optional. Can you share the percentage of students that were actually accepted that didn't submit test scores? And depending on the school, oftentimes it's 50-50. Some of the more competitive schools, they report it as 30-70. But the point is, it is not a myth. And the common data set, such an important resource for people to search. So common data set for insert school, and it's something that comes up, and you could actually look at that data, not only on the test optional nature of that particular school, but so much more information. So Chris, we really appreciate that. And how can students effectively utilize college fairs, campus visits, or information sessions to gather information and narrow down their college choices, Chris?
Yeah, I think that these are great resources. The campus visit, the college fair, information sessions, all of these. And I also want to say, John, now that colleges have so many virtual sessions as well, you know, if for students where they're not able to go visit a campus in person, there are just tons of great opportunities to really demonstrate interest and connect with the school. The first piece of advice I would say is I think it's really important for students to know what their non-negotiables are. Mm-hmm. You know, I often tell my kids, go talk to your parents about how they bought your house. You know, what was the non-negotiable? You know, was it having the 3-bedroom or the ensuite or, you know, wraparound porch? I was like, what is the non-negotiable? And for many students, it may be finances. For some of my kids, just like you said earlier, John, it's like, I don't want to be in this country or I don't want to be in the city. And so I often tell students, as you are preparing your list, figure out what isn't negotiable. But on the other hand, once you've figured out what isn't negotiable, be open to colleges that might not be on your radar. Be open to colleges that, you know, nobody in your family has heard of. And go check out schools, because that school actually may be the place that you end up at. I would say, particularly for campus visits, talk to students who are currently at that campus besides your tour leader, because your tour guide is going to be so excited about that campus. But if you have opportunity just to maybe talk to another student, the other thing I do is I often pick up the school newspaper and read it, because I kind of want to know what is going on that campus. What are students talking about? If you can take a look at the dorms, also eat a meal in the cafeteria. You know, I think that's really important too, or it can be, or, you know, talk to someone who goes there and has eaten there, because, you know, you're going to eat like several thousand meals in that cafeteria. So those are just a few of the things I would say with regard to students and utilizing those resources.
I appreciate that. And I love how you put it. Know your non-negotiables, whether it's the finances or your affordability, whether you want a rural area, urban area, and anything and everything in between. And you're right. It's very important to speak to random students on campus. The tour guides are awesome. They're usually enthusiastic. You know, they're trained to give you the best of the best. But take time to speak to that random student. Take time to go into a dining hall. And what I always advise students and parents is that there's a false sense of comfort, in my opinion. You know, when you visit a campus and you're there with your family members, you know, usually you go on a tour, it's exciting, it's fun, you go and have a nice dinner together, and everybody is happy. But I think it's very important if students can take, even if it's just 1 hour, where they could go sit on a bench a little bit, go to the dining hall, walk around on their own, and really reflect, students, if you have the good fortune of visiting schools, whether or not you see yourself there for 4 years. So again, Chris, we really appreciate that insight. And as students prepare their college applications, what other advice do you have for crafting a well-rounded list of target schools that includes both reach and those safety options?
Yeah, just a couple things, because I feel like I've talked a little bit about sort of safety, reach, and target schools. I would say if financial aid is the main driver, make sure that there are schools on your list that are affordable, right? Definitely use the net price calculator, which every college has on their website, to at least get a ballpark number of the amount of financial aid that school may be prepared to give to you and to your family. I would say be strategic in putting the list together, because we are finding that regular decision has become very, very competitive. And kind of tied into that, John, is make sure that every safety school is a school that you can picture yourself at and you would be excited to attend. There are a few things that are more frustrating for a college counselor than when a student gets their options at the end are all safety schools, and then they come around and tell the counselor, oh, I really didn't want to go to that school.
Right.
John, that is not a safety school if that is not a school you can see yourself at. I would also say that remember that the application process is primarily academic. If a school is kind of putting out the information of what they are looking for academically, know that that's one way to gauge whether that school is going to be a safety, a target, or a reach school.
Well, those are great pieces of advice, particularly when you're talking about picking safety schools, students that you would actually attend, because you never know. It might only be the safety schools that you get admitted to. So you certainly want to take your time, do your research, and include safety schools that, in fact, you would attend. I also love the fact that you mentioned that net price calculator, because obviously finances is such a big conversation for so many students and their parents throughout the country and beyond. And the net price calculators are pretty accurate, and every school has one on their website. Sometimes it's not so simple to find, so you could simply do a Google search, net price calculator, and insert the name of school. Chris, this has been a phenomenal conversation. Unfortunately, it does bring us to that last question, which is, what are your top three pieces of advice that you would provide students and their parents getting ready for the college admissions process?
Here's my top three pieces of advice, John. One, I know it is so cliche, and actually somebody wrote this as a book title, but where you go isn't who you are. I often tell my students that you are the exact same person before that decision came out as the day that that decision came out. Nothing about you has changed. And I really think students hand over too much power to a college decision and letting them impact, you know, their understanding of who they are. And so at our school, John, I'm on this mission to get rid of the word rejection to replace it with redirection. You have been rejected. You are being redirected. And so that really goes for me. It goes hand in hand with student mental health, student confidence, student self-esteem. It's one college's decision, you know, and it should not be that thing that wrecks you and your world. My second piece of advice, and I give this to all my rising seniors, John, and nobody follows it, but I tell them they really should because it would reduce stress. I tell my students, please get ahead of this process. If you would work on your college application 15 minutes every night, you would knock out your personal statement and your common application by the time you get back here in the fall. Now, John, as I said, nobody follows that advice because they go home, you know, and then the job starts, or their friend wants to hang out at the beach, and or they think, oh, school just ended. I can't do anything. But really, I really believe this. If students could kind of take this in smaller chunks, it would be far less stressful if they did not wait until October to figure out what their personal statement is going to be. And then the third thing I would say is, I've actually said this before, John, but I'm going to include it here as one of my three pieces of advice. Be open to options. There aren't 50 schools in the United States. I know it feels like that at some schools and some student bodies, but as you said, there are 4,000. And if you hear about a school that you've never heard of, like, go and check it out, right? Talk to your counselor, talk to other people, talk to other students. But one of my other missions here at Stony Brook is to expose our students to more than those top 50 schools. I just think that if students were a lot more open to options, they would also feel a lot better about this process. And I think that they would have a wider array of colleges to think about in terms of their safety, reach, and target schools.
Well, those are tremendous pieces of advice. And I love what you said about removing the term rejection and replacing it with redirection. I think that's brilliant. And I just wanted to repeat it for the benefit of all the students, parents, and school counselors listening. Chris, this is awesome. I cannot thank you enough. And I'm so happy, as I know that this is going to help so many students and their parents as they navigate through the college admissions process. Thank you so much. And I do hope to have you again, Chris.
Oh, thanks so much, John. It's been a pleasure being here today.
Our pleasure. And to everyone out there, good luck with your college search. Take care, everyone, and best wishes. Thank you for joining us on this episode of The CAP, the College Admissions Process Podcast. We hope you enjoyed the show. If you did, please don't forget to tell a friend and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and wherever you listen to your podcasts. I am your host, John Durante, and I look forward to seeing you on the next episode of The CAP. Thank you for listening to the College Admissions Process Podcast presented by Prep Expert. Prep Expert offers live online SAT and ACT courses with the best score guarantees, instructors, and curriculum. Go to PrepExpert.com to guarantee your child's success.